How's it going, folks? It is March 26th. We are just 2 days away from Padres opening day baseball. This is the Padres EVT podcast, episode 174. I'm Clark Farenthal. I am joined today by the creator of the East Village Times, James Clark. James, how are we feeling? Just a couple days away from opening day.
Yeah, a couple days, man. I'm excited. This is a different sort of feel than last year for sure, but it's definitely excitement's in the air, especially when they were able to get a series split against the Dodgers in Korea, which is positive after that first game, right?
Definitely. I think after, there was maybe some flashbacks to last season with how the way that first game went, maybe people a little bit worried, like, oh, is it just going to kind of be the same roller coaster? But right. They bounced back really nicely in that second game. I know some people kind of maybe had Mexico City vibes with it, but to come out there, establish the offense, Suarez coming there in the ninth to shut it down, I think it was a good little bounce back for them, and hopefully they can use it when they get into the series against the Giants.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, like I said, it's an exciting time. I mean, Padres baseball is in the air, and there can't be a better feeling than that if you're a San Diego sports fan, that's for sure.
Certainly. And so the first thing we're going to go ahead and roll into today, as we've both touched on, is this opening series against the San Francisco Giants. Always a tough test against San Francisco. It's a team who in the recent seasons we've played pretty well. Had some bugaboos last year, notably up in San Francisco with some efforts. But a team, again, as a whole, we've handled well, I think, the last 2 years. But it's also a team that's, revamped the offense, brought in some different pitching options. It'll be interesting. For you, James, looking at this first series, what do you feel like are some key points or things that San Diego is really going to need to excel at to go ahead and start off hot this season?
Well, I think to compete against the Bob Melvin-led Giants, I might have to add first off, which is a little strange in itself. They're going to have to put together better at-bats. We're going to have to see just a more patient approach from them as a collective group. I think at times last year it was stagnant, and we all know that their average with runners in scoring position, which was abysmal. It's the little things in the game that go a long way, and I think the failures of last year are going to teach them that moving a ball, a runner over, making contact when you need to make contact, doing the little things in the game are really huge when it's all said and done.
Certainly. I tend to agree. I think it'll be one of the big things I'm really looking for in this first series is that there's been so much we've kind of heard in the spring leading up to this offense trying to figure out an identity. And I think a big part of finding that identity early is bucking some of the old issues from last season. Sure. And none of them is bigger with runners in scoring position. And I think it's so odd, and you pointed out well, too, just the patience in those situations. Because I do feel like we'd be really patient. I mean, we were one of the highest walk rate teams in baseball last season. Mm-hmm. We didn't chase very much last season. But those tendencies sort of weirdly went out the window almost when we got to those runners in scoring position spots. I don't know if it was a sense of guys just pressing and trying to do too much, but it was a problem that never seemed to go away. So I think being able to figure out some of those early problems and resolving them in this Giants series, it's definitely something we're going to want to keep an eye on because, again, it's just a tendency you don't want to see repeated.
No, you don't want to start bad habits right away at the beginning of the season. You want to set the tone that there is improvement in that regard and that they have made the changes. We'll have to see what Martinez, the new hitting coach, if he's able to implement a new philosophy, which hasn't really been a thing for the Padres the past, God, since Merv Rettman, honestly. I mean, there just hasn't been a philosophy that this team has abided by and gone through each and every day. So we'll have to see. That's a big question mark for sure.
Definitely. And flipping it over to the other side, I think it's really interesting to look at the Padres starting rotation for this first set of four games. I mean, you'll have Darvish, King, Cease, Musgrove. I think those are four guys who historically you feel really confident in. Yeah. There's also a couple question marks that you look at it. Darvish coming off an injury a little bit, the down season last year. Musgrove kind of the same way. Hasn't looked great in spring. Didn't look great versus LA. King's a new face. Cease is a new face. For you, what are some of the things you would like to see out of this starting rotation early on here?
You know, I would like to see him eat some innings. I think just kind of not taxing the bullpen early on. Like last year, it seemed that the bullpen they handled the work, but they were taxed really early. Blake Snell, we all know, doesn't go deep in games. And that theme kind of seemed to continue for multiple pitchers during the year. There's a lot of uncertainty with the bullpen. There's high upside guys like Estrada, Go, Yuki is another high upside guy, but mm-hmm. they're kind of, you don't know what you necessarily have yet. So you don't want to throw them out there to the lion's den and, mm-hmm. and just have them have to pitch every other game, if you will. You want, kind of want to ease them into it. And you certainly don't want opposing teams to get a good view of their stuff early on, because a lot of their success is going to be the fact that just people haven't seen them.
Definitely. I agree. I think with the starting rotation, you're right. I think you want to see some of these guys eat a little bit more of innings, because I think that was something last year. The bullpen, I think at times, caught a little bit of flack for underperformance.
Yeah.
But if you look at them statistically, they were still a solid group. I just think it became a point to where you're having guys only go 4 2/3. You're having 5-inning starts.
Yeah.
And you're forcing them into places where it's like, all right, you're asking a lot for, if you think about it, 4 innings of shutout, 4 innings of one run from 4 or 5 different guys.
Yeah.
And mentally, is maybe as simple as that seems, it's obviously much more difficult to go out there and produce. And I think for your point too, figuring out those bullpen roles early in the season, I think is going to be critical. And I think there's guys in there that are definitely set up. You know, Suarez, I think, should have the ninth. I think you have a good 7th or 8th inning guy with Wandy Peralta who can give you a little bit more distance.
Yes.
And I think too, even with guys like, I mean, Tom Cosgrove, he's another guy who can work a high leverage inning. He showed you that last season.
Yeah.
So there's a bevy of interesting names, and that's not even listing guys who are still down in AAA right now, where you could see Estrada come up.
Yeah.
Alec Jacob, who I'm really interested in seeing coming back from his arm injury. I want to see him back in at some point. And Sean Reynolds, another guy. Yeah. So the bullpen has a list of names certainly that can be, you know, helpful either now or in the short term. Uh-huh. So just to see those guys kind of get figured out, I think will be another key point. Cause you know, losing Steven Wilson, as small as that may have seemed, he was a guy who was sort of your 7th or inning guy pretty consistently.
Yes. Consistently is right. Yeah. What I love about this Padres ensemble, which they've grouped together, is there's a lot of left-handed choices. I mean, you even have Morahone, who we haven't even mentioned, can spot start if you need, can long relieve, but is also, I mean, 99 miles per hour out of the left-handed side is rare, and that's good. And you team that with Peralta, Cosgrove. I mean, they have multiple left-handed pitchers that can go out there and pitch in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th if they have to. I mean, I can remember a time in 2016, 2017 where Will Venable was the only left-handed thrower on the whole 40-man roster. I remember writing about that. I was like, Preller hates lefties because there's one left-handed thrower on the whole roster. We don't have that problem anymore. It's nice to have depth. It's nice to be able to win games late. And ultimately, those can be demoralizing to other teams when you can just kind of steal a game away from them. And I think the Padres have a weapon in their bullpen for sure, or a potential weapon. I guess we'll have to wait and see if they're able to perform or not.
Certainly. I do think that, I mean, I know, you know, MLB.com releases the rankings depending on how much, you know, you want to put into what's said by one writer or the other, but they had them outside of the top 10 for their bullpen rankings, which I think, and again, maybe I'm a bit of a homer, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I think San Diego right now, you have to, in my opinion, they would be in the top 10. Cause I think it's what you said, the versatility they bring in. I mean, Morahone, I know he's an unknown, but he's a 99 mile an hour throwing left-hander. Yuki Matsui, you don't really know what you have there yet, but if you're basing it off his PNB numbers, he's a really quality guy.
And nobody's seen him, really. So, I mean, so they're just going to be baffled the first time they see him.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing, too. Like, for a guy like him, you don't have a scouting report on him yet. I mean, you've seen him in spring, but you can't really figure out, you know, his heat charge yet. Where does he miss? You know, where does he like to locate in certain counts? In the early part of the season, that's going to play to your advantage.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think the weapon the Padres could have that no one's really talking about outside of San Diego maybe is that bullpen. And I think you'll probably get a good test of it here early in the season, especially against the Giants, because a divisional opponent, you typically play closer games more often than not. So I think you get a good taste of them here in the early first four games.
Yeah. And you can understand the national media.
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt. I
mean, Suarez has no closing experience in the States. I mean, Yuki and Go are, again, no closing experiences, so you can understand where they're coming from and being a little cautious, if you will, but I
think there's
a huge upside with this team. And you mentioned the minor leaguers that are out there that are still capable of performing later on in the season if they need be. I mean,
I agree.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say that, like, oh, I don't understand why the national media is saying. I totally do. Oh, because again, it's an unknown for so many guys, as you pointed out. Suarez himself has not really ever had really true closing experience. So this will be his first go out there. So we'll see how that sort of shakes out. Again, Padres bullpen certainly feels like a potential X factor. And I think that's kind of a nice segue to our next segment we have, which is who do we think will be X factors for this 2024 season with the San Diego Padres? You know, James, I had two names that I had written down. I don't know how many in particular you had. If you'd like to go first on this, I'll let you go ahead and take the
way. Why don't we go one each or something like that?
I think each would be great.
Okay. My first X factor is X Bogarts. I mean, that you need him to be consistent. You need him to be that 300 hitter getting on base. And, you know, you don't expect a lot of power, but you do expect professional at bats from him. You expect for him to set the tone for the rest of the team to lead and show them a professional at bat, a long at bat, a thought out approach at the plate. And you expect for him to lead in that regard. And the Padres do need that from him. I mean, he's no longer counted on to play shortstop and provide defense in that regard. He should be fine at second base. That's not a huge switch, if you will. I know it's difficult for someone who's been a lifelong shortstop, but it's something that is manageable. The contract needs to be justified. Yeah. I can't beat around the bush. I mean, I'm still really scared of that contract when Xander Bogaerts is 36, 37, 38, 39. I mean, and I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I completely agree. I think X is a guy who you certainly have to look at as an X factor in itself. Yes. Coming over from Boston, expectations were really high. And if you would have off the first month, you were like, great, this is exactly what we paid for.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, the wrist injury, I think, took a huge, I mean, getting hit in the wrist in that game, he became a different hitter. He's a traditionally, you know, a one-handed finish guy. You start seeing him go to two hands. Yep. You hear about all the cortisone shots and you're sort of like, man, is he ever going to get right? And he got it back on track towards the end of the season. So it's this sort of weird 2023 that you have to judge of a really hot start, a bad middle of the season when you really need him, and a hot finish.
Yeah.
And you're hoping you can find a way to level that out. And maybe it's just me, but I think he will have a bounce back 2024. I think it could be a situation similar to Nick Castellanos when he left to go to Philadelphia. His first year in Philly, it took him a little bit of a full season to really get acclimated. Year two, he's more comfortable in the environment. He's more comfortable in the field at Citizens Bank, and he pops off for one of his careers.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's not too far-fetched of an idea for Xander Bogaerts. No, I know a lot of people are down on him, but and I think
to his credit, like you said, you heard nothing from him about the wrists.
No,
nothing complaining about it. Nothing using that as an excuse. And that's exactly what you want to see out of your leader and someone that you count on each and every day. So I will give him that. And that is awesome. That is fantastic. He even if you ask him to this day, I'm sure he won't even use that as an excuse. And that's what you want to see. And he played through the pain and was out there every day like Manny Machado does. And that has a lot to do with building chemistry and just being a baseball player, honestly.
Definitely. I agree. I think a lot of guys also too, just the position change this offseason. A lot of guys who get 11-year, $280 million deal when asked a couple weeks, if not a week, like right into spring training, basically, hey, can you move to second base? A lot of them would say, kick rocks. I'm not doing that. You signed that,
right?
And you got me 10 years. I'm staying right here. You can figure something else out. But that's just the kind of player Xander is. That's the kind of teammate that he is, that he's willing to go over to second base. Yeah. I just think it tells you how much winning means to him, how much bringing a strong culture into that, locker room means to him.
Exactly. So, I can't blame him for taking the money. I can't blame him. I mean, if you're offered that kind of money, you're going to take it. He is what he is. He's a great player. He's just going to have to perform that way up until his late 30s. And there's a risk. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, he's surely capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait. And he's got that type of swing and that type of approach that is capable of getting better with age. So
I agree. I think one common thing that was always compared between the conversation between him and Trey Turner, because those were two contracts we offered at that time. And still now, I'm glad we gave it to Bogaerts, because Bogaerts is a guy who's hit tool first. He'll age better, I think, into the contract. I know, again, didn't go well the first year. But as you pointed out, I think he's a guy who, as time goes on, he can still just be a pure hitter that ages better into the older 30 years of his contract.
Yeah, he's not going to fall off a cliff where Turner is capable of hitting 200 and striking out 150 times in a bad year, in a really bad year. I mean, it's definitely a safer contract. We'll leave it at that.
Certainly. So, well, for my X factor, you know, I mulled over a couple options, you know, I folded through, you know, I thought about Jake Cronenworth was a name that I written down, and I think he certainly will be a part of it. But a guy I feel like definitely will be an X factor for the Padres is going to be Michael King. And, you know, he's the centerpiece of the Soto trade that, you know, was obviously a bit controversial for San Diego fans because you don't want to trade generational talent, but, you know, you don't know if Soto was going to sign back. So you have to get what you could for him then. Yeah. And I'm someone who's very high on Michael King because I'm someone who prioritizes sometimes stuff over what you can get, especially when you have a pitching coach like Ruben Niebla. Mm-hmm. And I think today even you saw a little bit of how nasty he can be when he's on. 7 strikeouts in 3 innings. The sweepers, in my opinion, of, you know, sweeper sliders, top 5 in baseball, that thing spinning at 2,700 RPMs. I mean, that thing dives out of the zone. The sinker had 19, 20 inches of, you know, horizontal run on it. I mean, this is a guy, though, that if he's on, is a quality number 2, could for some staffs maybe be a number 1, but a 2-3 guy. And if you look at the projections, 28% K percentage projection, 3.72 FIP, 3 WAR player, you know, he's someone who I look at, and if you get that out of him, you have a top 5 rotation in baseball. And if you have a top 5 rotation in baseball, in my mind, you're a playoff team. Yeah. So if you can get him to be, you know, a super consistent 3 or 4 for you this season, someone who goes out there, eats innings, is equally as nasty as the stuff that's reflected to what he puts out on the field, he makes a huge difference for San Diego.
Yeah, no,
so
I agree.
If they can get him to be, like today, for example, 46% chase rate on a sweeper, that was crazy. 50% chase rate on the changeup. That's how good his stuff is. Exactly. I know it's only 3 innings, and you can say, oh, it's just an exhibition game. And maybe I shouldn't read into it too much. But when I see what he has paired to what he did with New York as a starter, it feels like a guy who can make a huge impact in San Diego this season.
He feels like a guy who's really grasping the idea of how to pitch.
Yeah.
You see a lot of movement on his two-seamers now. You see a lot of swing and misses, like you say. That leads me to believe that he's analyzing the hitters, along with the staff, of course, and along with the catcher, of course, but he's analyzing the hitters and he's knowing how to approach them and what they're trying to do to him. And that is valuable stuff that when a pitcher turns into a pitcher rather than a thrower, Michael King is not blessed with 9,900 mile per hour stuff. So he has to pitch, and slowly over his progression in the major leagues, he's really learned his craft, and that's exciting. And there's just a lot of upside with him, and you really love to see that for sure.
I agree. I think too, again, you pair him with a guy like Niebla. I think you saw with Ruben Niebla last season just how important he can be to pitching development. Because Michael Wacha has been a good Major League Baseball starting pitcher. Seth Lugo had been a good relief pitcher throughout his career.
Yeah.
He took both of those guys and exponentially improved their game. Lugo's run that he was getting on his fastball, the RPMs, the IVB he was getting, all saw major upticks. Wacha, even with dealing with the shoulder injury, you saw him continue to improve. I think that was sort of a showing ground for maybe just not only every other pitcher in Major League Baseball, but for all the organizations. Like, that's what he's capable of doing.
Yes.
And I think his implementation cannot be overvalued enough, and I think is really going to help a guy like Michael King, who I think has great stuff and a high ceiling, to only continue to push him forward.
For sure.
So pairing those two together, I think is going to be, I hope I should say, is going to do big things for San Diego. And hopefully maybe by about midseason, if he's pitching well, maybe you start to hear contract talks. I think he's a guy who's certainly worth extending. You could pay him a little bit less because the track record isn't there.
Yes,
he's only 28. I think he's a guy who could, if he pitches well, it's great for us, but it's also great for him because he can start to roll that into a contract idea.
Yeah. Lock him up for a couple of years and have him under control, and you don't have to worry about that. And you can solidify the middle of the rotation to the upper end. So, you know, Musgrove and Darvish are both coming off arm injuries and scary ones at that. So we'll have to wait and see. Innings, are they going to be able to eat innings? For my next X factor, I'm going to have to go with Dylan Cease, because you're going to need someone who at the top of the rotation is going to be able to get late in the games. I mean, that's something I mentioned earlier you didn't see from Blake Snell. I mean, Blake Snell has never finished an eighth inning in his career. And this is a guy who's won two Cy Youngs. Mm-hmm. He's just not that guy. He's just not a guy who pitches the contact. He's not a guy who gets outs, gets nine pitch innings. He's a max effort, strikeout kind of guy. And Cease is capable of reining that in a little bit. I heard him talk a little bit about wanting to pitch more to contact and wanting to work later in games. And I like that, hearing that from him. And I think Nebula is someone that can actually help him in that regard.
I totally agree. I mean, I think there's a conversation. I think maybe someone put up a Twitter poll or something like that. If you could have Blake Snell right now or Dylan Cease right now, who would you rather take? Right. And I understand, and this is not against a knock against Blake Snell, because I think Blake Snell is a great Padre. I loved him while he was here. He was great with the fans, media, everyone he interacted with. I never heard a bad thing. You want a Cy Young year. Obviously great. But Dylan Cease is 28. He's more affordable. I think his stuff is better. And I think what he gives you in the short term is possibly more than what Blake Snell would have given you in the short term.
Yes.
And I think, too, like I pointed out, I have a little bit of hesitation with Dylan Cease on some of his stuff, whether it be in zone contact. He walks guys a higher clip, you know, just the K rate went a little bit down, but all that stuff was still well above league average. And he's still an elite arm. The stuff is, again, by stuff plus, I think it was 115 last year, which was fifth best in baseball. He has just a dozen ways to get you out. And plus, you're already seeing him with Niebla. He's developing, you know, he's working on a sweeper already. He's working that into the game. Yes. So I think.
And he starts every fifth day. I mean, he eats innings. He's throughout his career, he's been out there every single time. So that in itself is a lot of value.
I agree.
Especially when you're talking about Darvish and Musgrove, who are both iffy. So
definitely. I think, like to your point, he's probably the most certain in terms of inning quality, like how far he can go into games, the most certain you could be on any of the starters right now. Because there's no injury history as of recent. He has that proven track record. Yeah, again, the walks are there, but he's not dealing with, he's not coming off an injury. He's not an older guy. And, I think he's the most certain mark.
I think a huge thing to think about is that he's pitching for a contract right now.
Yeah.
He's pitching for a major contract that he will likely get in 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Motivation is a strange thing in baseball.
Very strange.
Very strange. It's strange how that works.
Strange how it works. Oh, when you know the dinner bell rings.
Yeah.
And the dinner bell rings. Sometimes you just go ahead. I mean, just ask Blake Snell last year. Granted, it didn't quite work out of the contract that you maybe have looked for, but that dinner bell rings.
And the year before was like Darvish or Snell. Who should we extend? It was a question, and they picked Snell. I mean, they picked Darvish. They went for the safer bet, and then Blake Snell just goes off. So motivation is a huge factor in this game. It just makes you concentrate and makes you implement changes and makes you really listen to your coaches just a little bit more. And it's funny how the results come after that. So.
Definitely.
We'll have to wait and see. Maybe Padres should just put every player on a contract year then.
Yeah, maybe just go ahead and just be like, hey, guys, I know we have you to the extension already, but it's actually going to go to 1 year now, and you're going to have to figure that out, but we're going to need to get that going here for us. So
The players union is so strong. That is just, we're just,
So let me ask you this too, just on a quick last note for Cease. I mean, I know he's, as you pointed out, on that contract year, Scott Boras is his rep. Obviously, we have a little bit of a history with Preller and Scott Boras. Do you think, what if you had to put a likelihood of an extension with him by the time his Padres career is nearing its end, how likely do you feel like of a possibility that is?
20, 25% maybe. I think that he would really have to love San Diego. He'd really have to perform, and he'd likely have to take some sort of a pay cut. I mean, when you're talking about Machado, Bogarts, and Tatis contract over the next 10 years, it leaves you little room, especially when you have a farm system with Snelling and Lesko and players that are going to come up and that are going to make league minimum for the first couple years and then go to arbitration. And that's the formula that's set out for the Padres and by the Padres. They're going to have some veteran arms at the top of the order, and then they're going to have young players that are going to come in and fit in when they need to. And that's just how it's going to have to be. I mean,
definitely. No, I agree. I think that probably, I mean, I know there were some sentiment around, if you looked online, Padres Reddit, Padres Twitter, or wherever, they're like, mm-hmm. oh, we can extend him. I was, in my mind, I was like, pump the brakes on that thing.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Pump sure. the brakes just a touch. Yeah.
sure. I mean, you got Kim as a free agent next year. I think
yeah, I know.
It's going to be more about wanting to give him his $180 million or whatever he's going to command.
Definitely. Well, for my second X factor, you know, I think so many people have touched on Jackson Merrill, and he's undoubtedly an X factor because of who he is and what the Padres are banking on, his age, mm-hmm. the ceiling, and everything else from what we've seen. I'm going to go a little bit different route. I'm going to go back to Jake Cronenworth. You know, I think there is a lot still hinging on Jake's shoulders this season. He is the only proven left-handed bat career-wise that San Diego has in its lineup right now. Yes, yeah. Jackson Merrill could be great at some point, and I really hope he does. And with the exit velocity numbers he's putting up, the barrel rate that he's putting up early on in these first couple games, he certainly looks like a guy who could go out in his rookie year and have an OPS over, you know, 800, a WRC plus over 105, good power numbers across the board. Mm-hmm. But Jake Cronenworth's the only established left-handed hitter in this lineup, I should say. He's going to kind of, I think, make the offense go in a smaller sense the more than people think. That middle of the lineup, he breaks up between the number of right-handed hitters there are in this lineup. He's just sort of that buffer in between. And coming off a season last year that wasn't good, that really, I think, fell short of everyone's expectations, including his own.
Yeah.
It's important to see him have a bounce back season. I really do appreciate and love to hear this offseason that he went back to the drawing board and he was honest with himself that last year wasn't good.
Right?
I agree. And, you know, there's been guys in the past that haven't. And to see him, you know, and it's noticeable adjustments. The bat was so much more vertical the past mm-hmm. couple seasons. He's made it more flat, horizontal. It looks a little bit more like Bryce Harper. Okay. I know some people have sort of made of him like, oh, Jake Cronenworth has a gut now. I'm like, he just looks like he added.
He's a first baseman more. Now.
No, I know. It's just, to me, I'm like, that's it. He's just a first baseman. I think maybe he's selling out for the idea of I need to put more weight on and try to be a more traditional first baseman and hit for power. Is that the best idea?
You know, I read something last year that Cronenworth was one of the highest in fly balls to the warning track. Like he,
yeah, I can believe
just
that.
Just missed homers, one of the top percentages in baseball. So,
you know, if it works, it works. Obviously, it'll be a wait and see on that. I have been a proponent of Jake's biggest strength his first 2 years was his ability to make contact and not swing and miss. He constantly, yeah. like, as his rookie year and that second year when he was, you know, an all-star his second year, he was a gap-to-gap player. He was patient. He would foul off pitchers' pitches with two strikes. He could go the other way down the line. If he went back to that this year, I would be thrilled. If he yeah. decides to sell out for power, though, I'm okay with it because at least it's him, you know, making an yeah. adjustment to try to be different. Do I know if it's going to work or not? Who knows? But
yeah. I mean, his numbers have declined
every year.
And we're talking about OPS, average, home runs. They've all declined every single year. So he has to change. He has to. And if we're sitting here in July and we're talking about Cronenworth around the Mendoza line with four yeah. home runs, this team's either going to be in serious trouble or they're going to have to make a major move to find a first baseman and a DH, presumably at that time, because Manny should be able to man third
yeah.
baseman. And I don't want to see Wade out there every day at third.
No, baseman. No. Respect to Tyler Wade for being scrappy at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
It, but I'm not looking forward to be out there every day.
So potentially there's, I mean, first base and DH, that's your offensive powerhouses come from those positions.
Completely.
And we have whatever they put out there. So,
you know,
they still have money to spend. They still have prospects yeah. to spend. There's still moves that can be made. We know AJ yeah. Preller is a madman in that regard. So
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to just have to play out the first couple months, weeks of the season and mm-hmm. hopefully they compete and they keep their head above water and then we might see some moves. I don't know. It's tough to really predict anything that AJ Preller does. I mean, honestly, it's like impossible. You could throw darts at a dartboard. You'd probably be more accurate.
Definitely. I mean, he is sort of also, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, we're not doing anything, but AJ has had this track record of being, oh, it's almost opening day. Let me just yeah. get one more deal out there exactly. before we go ahead and get out
the
there.
Deal of Kimbrel that brought Kimbrel yep. the last, I mean, He's famous for this stuff. I mean,
no, It's almost like a little game to him. Like, how late can I go before I can make one more deal to improve the roster? How far can I strain everyone's mind before?
And none of us know exactly the dynamics of these deals. Like, did the White Sox call him and say, you know, okay, we'll give you Cease for blah blah blah, we're good, or did he call and say, you know, we'll throw in Zavala and we'll get the deal done and that's it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, none of us are ever going to know that. That's information that's privileged, and we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, let's discuss let's discuss the Cease deal. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, we can touch. I think the Cease deal is sort of important because it falls in line directly with what we're talking about right now. You know, my initial thought on it, again, I think adding Cease to the rotation immediately pole vaulted the Padres further into a contention window, because it gives you, I mean, you could make an argument in Ace and Yu Darvish. But Cease is a bona fide, like, this is an ace. Yeah, this is a guy who you're like, all right, we need to win. We're going to go hand you the ball because you have some of the nastiest stuff in baseball. Yeah. And, you know, you can walk the walk and talk the talk in terms of how he performs. And, I know, again, numbers have been on like a tiny decline the last 2 years, but they're still well above league average.
Yes.
His move, again, it just, as a sense, reaffirms this is a team that's trying to compete. Mm-hmm. And then also, again, it just makes them more likely of a playoff team because that depth is, and the pitching rotation becomes so much deeper when you add him into that. Like, you're shifting King or Musgrove or Darvish. Like, one of those guys is your number four now. Like,
exactly.
That's crazy.
What would happen if one of those guys went down in the spring?
Exactly.
The White Sox knew that, and all of a sudden ceases to go, oh, it's going to cost you so and so an extra prospect because you're desperate for pitching. So,
I agree. You know, I think, again, as someone who enjoys watching prospects, we've talked about before the show, losing Iriarte hurt. Like, I know you weren't as high on Iriarte.
I'm not. I
no.
It just, from my years of watching prospects, to me, the wildness is just not going to go away. That's just always going to be a factor. And he has stuff, but I found that later on, stuff translates into right down the middle, getting lit up in the major leagues. So, you know, and I could be completely wrong, which happens all the time, honestly, but Iriarte was an enigma to me. I think that Preller knew his value was really high right now. And if he went to El Paso and got lit up, his value would decrease, or even San Antonio for that matter. So I think he just maximized value on him. I don't, to me, Zavala is the wild card. Zavala is someone that could never make the majors, or someone who could be a perennial all-star. I don't know. I've talked to the kid several times. He was working out like a madman.
Added on like what, like 30 pounds or something like that.
And that's the kind of stuff you'd like to see. So I don't know. I don't, there's still a lot of things that need to be changed in his swing and his game and stuff, but there's upside there. So I don't know. And then Thorpe is someone who, you and I have kind of debated about that internally, what we thought of him. To me, Thorpe screams a relief pitcher, in my estimation.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I understand the changeup is just amazing from him. But
no, I mean, the changeup's a great pitch for him, yeah.
But if it's about adding Dylan Cease for the 2024 season, you got to do the deal. I mean, it is what it is. And especially when you have so much other pitching depth behind them to step up. And I mean, you know as well as I do, there's a lot of unheralded young pitchers on the staff. Travis Berger is one that just
100%
no one even really talks about that could just bust out in 2024 and become a top 100 guy.
I agree. And I think on some of those prospects, I agree Zavala is maybe of the group, definitely the biggest wild card, because I think the upside is really high. I think the raw power that you see is certainly there, especially with the filling out. I do like the bat to ball skills. I think he's a good athlete, but to that point, he's one of those guys where you look at it and be like, okay, I could see, you know, regular everyday outfielder. I could see that, but you can also sit there and say there's question marks enough to be like, would he ever break into it?
Exactly.
And so I agree on that. You know, for myself on Iriarte, the reason I was so high, and I think this just goes back to not a difference of philosophy, but the stuff for me is always what sticks out.
For sure.
And
for sure.
I agree. The command, definitely a concern at times. And would he ever lose that? That's going to be a big question. Like, is he going to be able to hone it in? But just to be able to see a guy go out there, you know, sit 97, 98, yeah. have rumors of 101. The slider to me was really coming along.
Nasty, just nasty.
It reminded me a little bit. He had shades of Denelson Lamet. Me, in terms of what I saw from that, two pitch combo, developing a third, I think the changeup was coming along. Will he ever be that? I know people are like, oh, will he ever be that? Denelson Lamet's like out of the league. But when Denelson was on and healthy,
yeah,
disgusting.
Cy Young in 2020. Dominant.
Yeah, so Yuri Arteaga, and the thing with me and him is I think the ceiling was just really high. He grew. And I think to your point, though, Preller probably did sell high because I think there's a real argument, certainly, that his value as a prospect was never higher than it was going into the spring because you saw all these videos. He was dominating in the backfield.
Yes.
He looked really good when he's out there in spring training. So, yeah, you need to make a trade for a guy like Cease. It's that would be the time to pull the trigger.
You know, you have to have a very good self-evaluation if you're the Padres and you're evaluating your prospects because you have to kind of put some out there and challenge them against – I don't want to say lesser opponents, but to make their numbers look better. And then you can kind of sell high on them and say, oh, look at how impressive he is. And, but you know, deep down inside from the talks that you had with him, that maybe there's certain things that he's just not going to be able to implement and change in his dynamics and his philosophy and his way of pitching or whatever. So again, this is stuff that we're just talking. We don't know.
Yeah.
And the Padres, Chris Kemp and the department that they run are excellent at this. They are self-evaluating their players all the time. They can tell right away within the first couple of weeks after they drafted a guy if they made him snake. I remember being in Peoria after Mason House was drafted, which was a top draft pick. And I can remember seeing him swing and miss constantly in batting practice. And I'm just like, wow. I mean, the batting practice pitcher's humming it in there, but
yeah,
like, swing and miss? Like, wait a minute. And the kid never made it through short season. I don't even think he made full season. And he's out of the game now. So you can make those evaluations pretty quickly. And then it's like, damn, we selected this guy top shit.
What are we going to do? I agree. Definitely. And I think that for the last one for myself, like Thorpe, as you pointed out, Thorpe to me always, his high end was like a fourth starter. And
yeah.
You know, people were like, oh, you know, top like of the just, I think he was like, people sometimes poo-pooed and was like, oh, he looks like Chris Paddock. And, you know, as people can make their jokes and stuff, but to me, in my head, I was like, all right, if you draw back the curtains and you forget how things maybe sort of ended with his UPS comments on the uniforms and everything, Paddock was still a number three guy. And
Paddock had a better fastball.
He certainly did.
Not as good a changeup in my estimation.
No, not as good. I think just my whole point with Zoe is that, like, yeah, 4-3 arms aren't sexy, but teams spend a lot of time trying to develop those, and they can be important.
Yeah.
So I won't be like, I'm distraught. Like, oh no, Drew Thorpe's gone, but he can still be a solid fourth guy in the White Sox rotation, I think. So in the future,
I think ultimately the Padres probably looked at him, saw his velocity sitting at 90, 91 and said, you know what? I don't know if we can get much more out of him. And the changeup is awesome and it's excellent, but is that going to be effective the third time through the lineup? The fourth time I've seen a team in the season. I mean, there had to be some concerns. And again, we're talking about Dylan Cease. We're talking about someone who's giving you value now and they wisely took the deal. And I think that it's going to be an important deal for this team moving forward. If they're going to have success in 2024.
Definitely. I think it's one of those, I mean, it'll certainly be when you look back at the end of the 2024 season, like, all right, was it like how defining of a move was it? How much of an impact did it make? So that'll certainly be big to look back upon at the end of this season. And maybe that's another perfect segue into our last topic for the day, which is, you know, our predictions for how the 2024 San Diego Padres will fare our record wise. James, I will let you go ahead and take a swing at this one first.
Well, I'm like punch drunk right now, thinking of scenarios in my head. Are we going to trade? Are the Padres going to trade for someone?
I know it's tough to tell.
You know, I'm not a much of a predictions guy, but I have to think that this team is going to finish above 500, and should do so pretty easily. So I'm going to go five games above 500, just to be safe.
You know,
I think that's safe enough to secure an NL wild card spot, I think, in this day and age. So But there's a lot of factors, though. They could trade for Vlad Guerrero in July and be finished with 110 wins. I mean, they are capable of this. They have the system. They have the ability. They have the general manager that can do it. So anything can happen, which is an exciting in itself, being a Padre fan.
Look, again, I totally agree. I think San Diego, if you were to poll people either in the fan base or outside, people who, you know, watch Major League Baseball daily, they might be one of the teams that have the most volatile prediction of where they could finish. Mm-hmm. Because if this team clicks and they make moves, as you pointed out at the deadline, because they're winning, this is a team that can win 94, 95 plus games if they're aggressive and things are all going right.
Right.
But it's also a team where it's like, man, if everything goes wrong, the pitching staff gets hurt, bullpen signings don't work, Bogarts doesn't bounce back, Machado's struggling, Merrill doesn't work out in center. Then you're like, is this a 76 win team? Is this a 77 win team? Like, so for me, the way that I ended up going with it was I went with a record of 87-75 was my final prediction for the season. I think that will be good enough to get them a wild card spot. I just think there's too many good players on the roster for them to struggle a second consecutive year. Machado, I think, is due for a bounce back. I think the injuries last year, again, no matter how much he wanted to admit it or not, certainly hampered him. I think it's the same way with Bogarts. Mm-hmm. I think having Campagnano, that's an added to the lineup. You're getting much more production out of the catcher position. The bullpen is better, I think, this year with the number of options that they have. Obviously, the closer is a little bit TBD because you had Josh Hader. Now you have Robert Suarez.
Yeah.
And I think the pitching staff and the starting rotation is better this year going into last year. I liked Waka. I liked Lugo. And it's not to say that those guys weren't good because the rotation was solid last season. Mm-hmm. But adding Cease and adding King, if you were to replace them to where Waka and Lugo are, that is an objective upgrade.
Yeah, I
just think this team, again, has too much talent, has too many guys on the roster that have a track record. And again, we haven't even talked about him, but I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is bound to have a Ronald Acuna-esque bounce back season. I'm really high on it. We haven't touched on Fernando, but I think this is a year that he just explodes, that maybe he doesn't, you know, cash in receipts that he had on people, because a lot of it was self-inflicted, but you know, he still has that huge explosive year like Acuna did coming off of his second year, you know, after his injury. I think Fernando busts out for that. So
I think so. I think so. The eyes just aren't on him like they were last
year. No, they aren't.
There's not like he needs to perform. He needs to play 162 games.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. He's not playing every day. It's always something, blah, blah, blah. That's going to be all over with. He doesn't have to apologize to anyone. When you go on the road, he's going to get less PD, BS from the fans, so he can concentrate on being himself and just taking his game to the next level. That's what we want to see, right? We want to see that perennial – that all-star MVP type player who's triple crown ability.
Yeah. 50 that we saw in 2020, 2021, 2019.
Exactly. And the platinum glove out there. I mean, we've already seen it in the two games.
Yesterday.
Right. I mean, that doesn't go away, and that's huge. That is huge. You bring your glove to the field every single day and you make a play that doesn't go in slumps. So this team is an enigma. You just don't know. And then, you know, we didn't even mention Montgomery signed today with the Diamondbacks.
I mean, the division's tough. I mean,
this division is just
besides
the Rockies, there's no pushover.
Besides the Rockies, who seem to beat our ass every single time we show up to Coors Field for some reason. I agree. I mean, the division is so difficult right now. It's the best in baseball. I mean, the AL East you could maybe say is a contention for it too, with the Orioles, Rays, Yankees. But I still think I would say the NL West pound for pound would be more difficult. So.
And three former Padre managers in the NL West, other than Lovello in Arizona. That's the only one that's not a former. I'm waiting for the Diamondbacks to hire Andy Green. So
I know someone's going to have to pick up Andy Green, or maybe Will Venable will come, former player, after Ben Chirinos becomes someone else. Maybe he takes over for Bud Black if he gets let go from Colorado or something. But who knows? It'll be. I think I know this for certain, and maybe this is a cliche, but it's going to be an interesting season no matter what. This team is going to have headlines, whether it's positive or negative, and they'll be enjoyable to watch. And I think it's
they're entertaining no matter what. If they're losing, they're still going to be entertaining. They're still entertaining play. I mean, you're talking an old guy who saw, I mean, just horrible baseball from this team for a year. I mean, I was a season ticket holder going, why am I spending money to watch these guys? It's not even fun. They don't put on a show. It's just boring, stagnant, baseball for a long time. So I understand some fans are a little perturbed over losing Soto and the downgrades, if you will, from last season. But last season was a horrendous crap on fire.
Yeah, last year was an objective failure on all levels. Yeah.
Right. So they had to change something. And hopefully this is the roll of the dice that works. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see, Clark. I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see. And I just know, again, for myself, you know, the worries of expectations of what can happen. The bottom line is baseball's back all the way up until the end of October. Sure. I get to enjoy hopefully, and through the end of October, I get to enjoy Padres baseball. I just get to enjoy baseball in general for the next however many months. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to watching the Padres this season. So.
For sure. And folks, we're going to be more regimented with the show. I know that Dominic and I last year made this promise to you guys. Unfortunately, Dominic is a busy guy. He's a minor league broadcaster. He had opportunities with the Padres this spring. He's doing a lot of things. So that's why I have my friend, Mr. Clark, here, who's we're going to have the Clark and Clark show this 2020.
Let's go ahead and roll through. I know I got the big shoes to fill. Dominic, he's got he's out there doing big things for the Padres this spring. So got to follow up that reputation, keep maintaining things over here. So I'll do my best to do that, Dominic, if you're listening.
We're going to give you some quality content, folks. So just don't worry about it. We got guests lined up. Clark and I will be in Lake Elsinore next week, checking out the storm firsthand. So exciting things for the 2024 season on the EVT podcast. So just thank you for bearing with us. I know we've been around since 2015 and the show's kind of been up and down, but thank you so much. I'm excited and rejuvenated with my new co-host here.
Sounds good. Well, I'm just about as excited as you are too. So we will be back later this week. Hopefully we'll be talking the Padres. We'll have a couple wins in the win column. Offense will be blossoming in front of our eyes. Darvish, Musgrove, King, all those guys will have thrown gems by then. So until then, next time, this is EVT Podcast. I'm Clark Farenthal for my co-host James E. Clark. Have a great rest of your evening, folks, or morning, depending on what time you're listening.